KOJB 90.1 The Eagle, good day and welcome to Environmental Voices. I'm your host, Marie Rock, and today we are wrapping up our three-part series on indoor air quality. We're talking about the effect of indoor plants. House plants, together with the medium in which they are grown, can reduce components of indoor air pollution, particularly volatile organic compounds such as benzene, toluene, and xylene. Plants remove CO2 and release oxygen and water, although the quantitative impact of the house plant is small. Most of the effect is attributed to the growing medium alone, but even this effect has finite limits associated with the type and quantity of medium and the flow of air through the medium. The effect of the houseplant on a VOC concentration was investigated in one study done in a static chamber by NASA for possible use in space colonies. The results showed that the removal of the challenged chemicals was roughly equivalent to that provided by the ventilation that occurred in a very energy-efficient dwelling with a very low ventilation rate, an air exchange rate of about 1/10 per hour. Therefore, air leakage in most homes and in non-residential buildings, too, will generally remove the chemicals faster than the researchers reported for the plants tested by NASA. The most effective houseplants reportedly included aloe vera, English ivy, and Boston fern for removing chemicals and biological compounds. Plants also appear to reduce airborne microbes, molds, and increase humidity. However, the increased humidity can itself lead to increased levels of mold and even VOCs. When CO2 concentrations are elevated indoors relative to outdoor concentrations, it's only an indicator that ventilation is inadequate to remove metabolic products associated with human occupancy. Plants require CO2 to grow and release oxygen when they consume. While studies indicate houseplants may be effective at removing some VOCs from air supplies, a review of those studies between 1989 and 2006 on the performance of houseplants as air cleaners, presented at the Healthy Buildings 2009 conference in Syracuse, New York, concluded indoor plants have little, if any, benefit for removing indoor airs of VOCs in residential and commercial buildings. Since high humidity is associated with increased mold growth, allergic responses, and respiratory responses, the presence of additional moisture from houseplants may not be desirable in all indoor settings. HVAC design. Now, environmentally sustainable design concepts also include aspects related to the commercial and residential heating, ventilation, and air conditioning industry. Among several considerations, one of the topics attended to is the issue of indoor air quality throughout the design and construction stages of a building's life. One technique is to reduce energy consumption while maintaining adequate air quality is demand control ventilation. Instead of setting throughput at a fixed air replacement rate, carbon dioxide sensors are used to control the rate dynamically based on the emissions of actual building occupants. For the past several years, there's been many debates among indoor air quality specialists about the proper definition of indoor air quality and specifically what constitutes acceptable indoor air quality. One way of quantitatively ensuring the health of indoor air is by the frequency of effective turnover of interior air by replacement with outside air. Generally, outdoor country air is better than indoor city air. The use of air filters can trap some of the air pollutants. The Department of Energy's Efficiency and Renewable Energy section wrote, air filtration should have a minimum efficiency reporting value of 13. Air filters are used to reduce the amount of dust that reaches the wet coils. Dust can serve as food to grow molds on wet coils and ducts and can reduce the efficiency of the coils. Moisture management and humidity control requires operating HVAC systems as designed. Moisture management and humidity control may conflict with efforts to try to optimize the operation to conserve energy. For example, moisture management and humidity control requires systems to be set up to supply makeup air at lower temperatures instead of higher temperatures sometimes used to conserve energy in cooling-dominated climate conditions. However, for most of the U.S. and many parts of Europe and Japan, during the majority of hours of the year, outdoor air temperatures are cool enough that the air does not need further cooling to provide thermal comfort indoors. However, high humidity outdoors creates the need for careful attention to humidity levels indoors. High humidities give rise to mold growth, and moisture indoors is associated with a higher prevalence of occupant respiratory problems. The dew point temperature is an absolute measure of moisture in the air. Some facilities are being designed with the design dew points in the lower 50s and some in the upper and lower 40s. Commercial buildings and sometimes residential are often kept under slightly positive air pressure relative to the outdoors to reduce infiltration. Limiting infiltration helps with moisture management and humidity control. Dilution of indoor pollutants with outdoor air is effective to the extent that the outdoor air is free of harmful pollutants. Ozone in the outdoor air occurs indoors at reduced concentrations because ozone is highly reactive with many chemicals found indoors. The products of the reactions between ozone and many common indoor pollutants include organic compounds that may be more odorous, irritating, or toxic than those from which they are formed. These products of ozone chemistry include formaldehyde, higher molecular weight aldehydes, acidic aerosols, and fine and ultrafine particles, among others. The higher the outdoor ventilation rate, the higher the indoor ozone concentration, and the more likely the reactions will occur, but even at low levels, the reactions will take place. This suggests that ozone should be removed from ventilation air, especially in areas where outdoor ozone levels are frequently high. Recent research has shown that mortality and morbidity increase in the general population during periods of higher outdoor ozone. Finally, building ecology. It's common to assume that buildings are simply inanimate physical entities, relatively stable over time. This implies that there's little interaction between the triad of the building, what's in it, the occupants and contents, and what is around it, the larger environment. We commonly see the overwhelming majority of the mass of material in a building as relatively unchanged physical material over time. In fact, the true nature of the building can be viewed as the result of a complex set of dynamic interactions among their physical, chemical, and biological dimensions. Buildings can be described and understood as complex systems. Research applying the approaches ecologists use to understanding of ecosystems can help increase our understanding. Building ecology is proposed here as the application of those approaches to the built environment, considering the dynamic systems of buildings, their occupants, and the larger environment. Buildings constantly evolve as a result of the changes in the environment around them, as well as occupants, materials, and activities within them. The various surfaces in the air inside a building are constantly interacting, and this interaction results in change in each. For example, we may see a window as changing slightly over time as it becomes dirty, then it's cleaned and accumulates dirt again, it's cleaned again, and so on throughout its life. In fact, the dirt we see may be evolving as a result of interactions among the moisture, chemicals, and biological materials found there. Buildings are designed or intended to respond actively to some of these changes in and around them with heating, cooling, ventilating, air cleaning, or illuminating systems. We clean, sanitize, and maintain surfaces to enhance their appearance, performance, or longevity. In other cases, such changes subtly or even dramatically alter buildings in ways that may be important to their own integrity or their impact on a building occupants throughout the evolution of the physical, chemical, and biological processes that define them at any time. We may find it useful to combine the tools of the physical sciences with those of the biological sciences, and especially some of the approaches used by scientists studying ecosystems in order to gain an enhanced understanding of the environments in which we spend the majority of our time, our buildings. Anybody that works for any job in a building definitely understand that. All right. Hey, that's going to wrap up this edition of Environmental Voices for KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. I'm Marie Rock.